You are listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. We are broadcasting on unceded Cassia territory of the Gidimden Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. And this is Nerding Out with Laura. We are live here Friday, February 16th. And I'm here with a co-host, River from River Reads.
Is my mic on? It's on. Yes, I'm live.
Mm-hmm. And we're just going to get ourselves sorted, get our notes sorted. And for now, enjoy this song, Un, Deux, Trois by Munya. Welcome back. You just heard Un, Deux, Trois by Munya, which are, I know they're Canadian, probably from Montreal.
I'm going to say, yeah, maybe. I mean, they.
That's a good guess.
A lot of French communities around the country, I guess.
Country.
Yeah. Around this country.
Yeah. So you are listening to Nerding Out with Laura, and River today is my co-host. We're live here Friday, February 16th, if it's not February 16th, then we're not live. It's a recording.
but pretend it's live.
Yes, yes. And we were thinking, like, what kind of topic we would like to nerd out on. We nerd out on way too many topics.
So many.
It was hard. So, and you suggested mushrooms.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am in love with mushrooms. And then Laura got excited because it just so happens that there is an exhibition at the Museum and Art Gallery. Do you know a bit more about that? I mean, I know a little bit, but you had also mentioned that.
I just knew it was happening, and my daughter Freya, who's sitting in the corner playing video games right now, she submitted a painting because it's a community art show.
Have one? I didn't see. I have to go back and look. I didn't know Freya had pieces because I have a couple in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So it seems like a good topic to match up with right next door to us here.
And then we didn't, because it's such a huge topic, I purposely asked Laura, like, let's not tell each other what we're going to do. Let's just see what we come up with. Like, just go out and do whatever kind of tickles our boat, I guess, and then we could bring it back. So we're going to see what we brought back.
We're going to educate each other and you. And yeah, when you said mushrooms, I was like what subtopic? Because, I mean, they're...
Clearly, I'm not a scientist because I was like, oh, it's just mushrooms, right? And then I started looking into it and I was like, Oh wow. Like,
I mean, if you think about it, saying the topic is plants.
I mean, it's that plants is easier than
it is actually.
It is, because I mean, from what I've looked at, I mean, it is the most dominant organism on the planet.
Yeah, and people may not realize that because you only see the fruiting bodies, right? You only see them pop out like magic, and I'm sure you have some stuff on that with your fairy tale connection.
Oh yes, we've got some fairy, what are they called? The fairy rings? Yeah, fairy rings and some folklore. But yeah, I was just shocked at how much and prolific the mushrooms are. And again, we're calling them mushrooms, but I mean, is it more the cap?
Yeah.
And is it more fungi then? Are we looking at a fungi kind of thing?
Fungi.
I'm not even saying what, right.
Well, I think there's different ways.
Potato, patata.
Yeah, or mycelium. I mean, that's still part of the mushroom. Yeah, what is the general term? I think it's just fungi.
I think it is fungi. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that we came from the same ancestor. So we're related to fungi. Like at the base of base evolution, there was a divide, and the belief is that human and plant went one way and the fungi went the other way. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, our brain networks match that of the mycelium.
I say mycelium.
You're saying it right. You're saying it right. I'm going with that.
I mean, I have vague biology memories that track with that, but you've been doing the more recent reading. So.
That we are more related, they're more related to animals than they are to plants.
Mm.
And they really are kind of their own magical entity. And I mean, I'm suspicious. I mean, can we say alien? I mean, we have seen fossils. There have been found fungi outside in other space things. We should maybe ask your dad if he knows anything about space mushroom finding, like of spores. That was one I just heard. I didn't look more into it, which was like, what?
Like some fossils, basically?
I'm assuming it was fossils. Yeah, I'm assuming fossils. It is the oldest fossil that they've had found on Earth are all in the mushroom fungi family.
Oh, wow. They're so soft, usually. Like, I think about, well, I guess the ones on trees, the shelf
kinds,
ones are quite hard. So, I mean, it's hard for a soft thing to leave a fossil. We often think of bones, but once in a while you get that rare condition.
Because, it says here, what did I have here on the note? Something, it's the oldest. Oh, it just said that because it's the oldest. It's also the smallest thing on Earth, and it's the oldest living thing on Earth. So it's the oldest fossil and the oldest living thing on Earth. And so we also have the biggest organisms that live, one of the ones I think even lives in, maybe it's in North America, it's up in the mountains somewhere, and it's, I don't know, it's miles and miles and it's thousands of years old, I believe. I wish I had more specific notes on that one. But again, 3.8 million fungi exist that they can estimate. But obviously there's even more because there's some that are so small we can't even see them with our naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone the spores. We can't see the spores, which we are breathing supposedly in all the time right now.
Of course.
So I was quite fascinated by that. But yeah, so they're, again, 90% of them are currently unknown, but that they breathe like us and are also known to even eat flesh.
Ooh.
Now, maybe you know this, but I was curious as to why do they, so they breathe oxygen and export carbon, so they can contribute to like climate, like global carbon emissions, but they also are able to store carbon. Certain ones can store carbon for thousands of years, and I was just kind of confused. So they're looking at using those as possible ways to harness carbon, but also under the understanding that they also are producing carbon. So again, some interesting research that I just
an estimated or like an educated guess here, I would say that they probably don't respire a lot, like they're not releasing a lot of carbon dioxide, and like as like organic chemistry, we're all made of carbon, right? Like carbon is so ubiquitous.
And that's what they're eating. That's what they're like engaging with. Is anything, I think it says carbon based. Was that what it said? That they kind of eat anything carbon based. So that's why they can eat oils. So they're being even used to clean up oil spills and things like that. But we can talk a bit more about that when we get into the environmental part of it. But yeah, so those were kind of my thing. And then we also talked about every foot that we make, like every step that we're walking in the woods, and maybe even around here, because truthfully, I don't actually know as much as I'd like to, but it says that 300 miles in every footstep beneath the soil is these mycelium, their little tentacles, which they are, like their little...
So maybe we need to like define a mushroom.
Let's do that. Let's do that. There's so much. You want to give it a try?
No.
Okay.
I think you have some good notes for that. Okay. Mine are very more specific in a certain area.
So let's see. I was going to look down here. So again, the most abundant species on Earth, ancestors to both plant and animals, but they are their own kingdom, populated kingdom, that they are single cell. All formed by a single cell growing together, and then those branch off into other things, and then those were similar to the network of the internet, and similar to our brain neurons and networks, and so those are what we're, so what we see as a mushroom is actually just the gonad, which is the populous, like the apple of the tree, right? So it's the fruit that is coming up of the ground. And what I'm talking about is the actual fungi, which is all of what is underneath the ground, as Laura was saying, or underneath the substrate, because it doesn't even need to be in ground. It can grow on everything. It can grow on basically anything. That was the other thing about mushrooms. So yeah, again, not a plant, not an animal, its own entity, smaller, so small that you can't even see it, so big that we can't even see it, right? Like that kind of thing. The oldest thing on planet. And we know so little about it still. We're just touching the surface.
Yeah. And I think, like, if you've ever dug into, like, a really rich piece of earth, right? Like, in the forest, it's got all those, like, dead leaf piles and stuff. And you'll see almost, like, little white, tiny white strands that you might think are roots. But often, it's mycelium. It's, like, the actual growing body of these mushrooms is underneath, and then just like magic, when the conditions are right, they like decide to reproduce, and those fruiting bodies just like pop out of the ground and release all these spores to spread them out, and that's only what we see.
And the spores are carried obviously by wind, by other animals, by us, all this different kind of things. So some mushrooms would require kind of homeostasis with other animals to kind of help them. So for instance, some mushrooms have the ability to be phosphorescent, and they're doing that to attract the insects that will then come and help spread their spores.
So phosphorescent would be like glowing.
Like the glowing that fireflies look like, fireflies and some sea creatures that glow. And so they have that. They also are similar to crustaceans somehow. I can't remember how. There's something similar about them in that sense, that they have similar components in their construction.
I'm thinking like chitin.
Yes, that sounds right. I think that sounds right.
Like a material that's on the shells, but then also is probably part of the mushroom body.
Yeah, exactly. And that they supposedly can live forever, in theory, in these homeostasis states, right? So if the living conditions aren't great, they can just kind of go into a hibernative state. And when, as Laura was saying, they can come back out. The other thing is the way they communicate, which is what we're just learning about, and really some new science coming out around how they are helping community of nature. Like they are communicating, trees use them to communicate with each other. They communicate themselves with each other, the mushrooms, or the fungi. And that, what else was it? That Okay, that they are doing neurons exactly like our brains. So they're sending electronic messages to each other in the form of chemical and an electronic.
Oh, that's perfect. That'll tie into my stuff later.
Nice. Yeah. So again, just like, I was just like, what? What is this even happening? Oh yeah, here it is. The cell walls. Mm. Their cell walls are exoskeleton, like insect shells and beaks of an octopus. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think they're just alien. That's all there is to it. I have full conspiracy. We have been invaded, people.
I feel like this own Earth is alien to most of
right.
us.
Oh my gosh.
Right? You oh could my gosh. Cover our eyes and pop us out in some other part of the world or ecosystem and we wouldn't know we were on Earth.
So they have found some, as I said, fossils in space. But again, who knows where that's come from. And I didn't. Don't check the fact. Or actually, do check the facts.
Yes. Always, always check for yourself. Don't believe anything you hear from us. Check all your sources.
All of it. Yeah. All of it. And of course, the other thing is they can be seem very parasitic. And again, that idea of you've heard of them being able to do the zombie ants and take over that. And so, of course, there's been a few movies that have come out kind of looking at that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the Body Snatchers, if we were to relook at the Body Snatchers, I bet that could have been traced back to some sort of mushroom invasion. Because we don't actually ever know what the Body Snatchers is happening in that movie. They just get taken over.
Yeah. The 70s. Go watch the 70s version. And I think the forming bodies are like covered in almost a mycelium net that they like tear out of. It's very good, very goopy and organic.
Yeah. So I was just so fascinated to see how our brains and mushroom fungi, quote unquote, function brains, because I mean it feels like it's a brain.
Yeah.
So, and to have them be completely interconnected in so many ways with each other, and to be able to have plants be able to use them again through these electronic ways of communicating through electric and chemical exchange, they're able to relay messages to offspring of different trees, and
like, they're almost like a forest brain.
They are definitely a forest brain. And we need more of that. I think as humans, we're seeming to lack some of that these days. We need more brain.
Yeah.
Come on, forest brain.
We don't like it as humans that it's so complex. We love to separate things and look at them individually. And that's what we've done a lot in Western science. And I think more in traditional knowledge, there's a recognition that things interact with each other and you can't pull one out and make assumptions, and you have to look at it as a whole being. This whole earth together is a being. Can you tell me more about the folklore, though? I don't want to skip that.
Let's get to that. Mm-hmm. So again, I was really hoping, I do another story called River Reads and I do fairy tales. So I was actually hoping I was going to try to write you a little fairy tale. That was a bit I got a bit ahead of myself, so that didn't happen.
Well, let's do it on your show.
Right, exactly. Yeah, That's what I was thinking. It got there. But it did get to the fairy rings. Because, again, I was looking at different stories that might have mushrooms. Of course, Alice in Wonderland is a big one. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Brothers Grimm do some as well. I read so many Brothers Grimm, and I've not come across them yet. So I'm like, wait a minute. So I'm going to try to find those. But when they were talking about them, they talk about these fairy rings. Mm-hmm. And I believe my sibling Megan has a fairy ring in their yard.
Oh, right now?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I mean, it's winter right now, but they have had them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have had them at different times. And so, again, my understanding is there's folklore around, because what they are these kind of like a circle in like a grassy area where mushrooms are growing in a circle. And I won't get to the science about why that happens, but it looks like people assume that it's actually like a portal to another fairy dimension. So they actually tell you don't stand in it. Don't go into the fairy ring, because you might get transported into the fairy realm. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of all those ideas. And I guess that kind of started. There's things in France. There's things in Holland that have this idea. There's things in England. So it's very much kind of in the Western culture of looking at fairy rings and kind of all around that elfish and fairies and magical things like that.
Yeah, I think I heard it's like the fairies danced in a circle overnight.
Yep.
And where they danced, the mushrooms popped up. Yeah. And yeah, if you go inside their circle, they'll steal you away.
Yeah, it don't.
Not as good as you think.
It doesn't sound as good. No, apparently, because they use words like don't. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
don't stand in the fairy. Makes me want to be like, don't tell me what to do. I'll go stand in it if I
Well, maybe they'll take you away to a good party. Maybe, but you're lucky enough to return, it might be 500 years later. Or something.
Right, exactly. And then, of course, to dismantle the joy of the circle, I'm going to tell you why it grows in a circle is obviously it grows outward. And so each year, if the growing conditions are correct, it should continue to get bigger. Because what's happening is the little mycelium is underground, it's growing, and it grows outward in a circular motion. Mm-hmm. And so when, as Laura was saying earlier, conditions get good, it goes, ooh, let's do some population. And by good, we need a substrate and moisture and mm-hmm. a certain temperature that they're looking for. Each one has their own kind of requirement for those.
And a lot of times it's to do with other plants or mushrooms in the area too that will signal them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that again can be through the mycelium. So they can even contact each other and be like, hey, come on over here, guys. But again, we're just learning now about how plants are talking to each other. And obviously mushroom is not a plant. But again, that idea of a similar that the plants and mushrooms are engaging in some sort of exchange of communication is just mm-hmm. like, wah, even if it's just chemical. It's pretty, yeah. I mean, that's what we are. Our brain is just a chemical. We're electrons and chemicals.
We are made of chemicals, everybody.
Like, just know that. If you ever find something that says chemical-free, just know that's impossible on this planet.
Yeah, even the air.
Even the air we're breathing is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was kind of it for the fairy. There was more, but there's so much other stuff that I wanted
there's
to also
so,
talk about.
So much. Yeah.
Right. But there was more. So there's lots around the folklore and things like that.
Maybe let's take a little song break and we'll organize what we're going to do next. Let's go with, what's this? I made this random list of like Canadian artists.
Love
music,
Canadian artists.
And I don't remember which is which. So this is Dermabrasion. Oh, no, that's a different one. Oh, that's the name of the band.
That's a good name.
Psychic Event.
That's also a good name.
All right, here we go. You are listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. This is Nerding Out with Laura. I'm here with co-host River. It's going to take a moment to thank Nature's Pantry, one of our sponsors. We're talking about mushrooms today, and I'm absolutely certain they have mushroom products there that are yummy and delicious. So go there and check it out. I also wanted to say that tomorrow night there is going to be a masquerade at Glenwood Hall held by the BV Community Arts Council. Tickets are only $20.
And it's a fundraiser, I believe.
Yes, it's a fundraiser.
Showcasing some local talent.
Showcasing some local talent. You got it. You're not even reading off the paper and you got it. Are you the local talent?
No, I'm not this year. I have performed in years past, but if you guys want to go and watch, I'm assuming it's going to be a range of different performances, because again, one year there was burlesque, there's dancing, there might even be some music, just a bunch of artists.
Poetry.
Yeah, all of it, all of it. It's just a night of surprises and masquerading and costumes, and you get to support local artists and arts.
Yeah, and just, you know, don't feel like, oh, I have to wear formal wear, or I don't have a proper mask. Like, just throw on whatever is fun. Like, it's an arts thing, so like go wild and I don't know, wrap a bandana around your
and there are still tickets and there are still tickets available, but they are selling fast. I believe over half are sold at the moment, so in Smithers that's actually quite a pre-sale.
Yeah, so if you're on the fence, maybe go pick it up at Mountain Eagle Books, and I'm sure they must be there for today and probably not tomorrow, so you'll have to get it at the door tomorrow, but hopefully I will see you there because I'll be there. And so yeah, River's got a lovely little book, The Tiniest Field Guide to Mushrooms I've Ever Seen.
Right, and it literally says A Little Guide to Mushrooms. I bought it at a local thrift store those are all lies. I brought it at a garage sale of one of my friends, not a thrift store at all. It was just magical. It felt like a thrift store. And I'm just going to quickly read. It's describing mushrooms in a kind of whimsical way. So some are tiny bowls, cups, or spoons fit for fairy feasts. There are species that look like daisy-petaled flowers, discarded citrus peels, miniature birds' nests complete with eggs, and even wrinkly brains and spooky zombie fingers poking from the earth. Some are so small you can't even see them with the naked eye, and some so large they can barely fit in a wheelbarrow or on a mountain.
Yeah.
That wasn't as accurate. And I will end it there. But yeah, just so fun. I love that. The nests and spooky brain fingers and just the feast of eyes. Like the most, if you want to see aliens, there you go.
Yeah, I love looking for mushrooms. I eat very, very few mushrooms, I find, because I'm very much a beginner. And if you want to go foraging for food, you have to bring someone who's knowledgeable.
Yes. But there's a lot of trickster ones out there.
I have so many pictures of mushrooms on
Same.
My camera all the time.
Same.
Because they're just so wonderful.
I really wish this was a visual visual show, because I even put pictures in my notes because I was just like wanting to be inspired by their beauty. Just so magical.
And yes, so once again, going back to when we picked the topic, and I was trying to think, I'm like, oh my God, such a big, huge topic. What do I want to focus on? And I remembered that a couple years ago, someone had bought me this Lion's Mane iced tea mix. And I was a little like, what? Mushroom iced tea? I don't know about that. It tastes fine. But I guess the reason a lot of people will buy it is because it's supposed to have all these health benefits. And so right on the front, it says immune support, whole food ingredients, and, you know, in the instructions, it's daily dose, you know, a medicine, right? So it's very like health forward rather than like food product. Yeah. So I would call this probably more of a supplement than a tea. And yeah, so I'm like, well, there's probably no harm in drinking it. It tastes fine, but I imagine it was probably expensive. And so I was like, okay, let's delve into this. Like, what is there really health benefits for this? And if you want to like go on Google Scholar and type in like lion's mane benefits, health benefits, you're going to get a lot of articles popping up. So I'll just like read off a couple here. Like mycochemical, so like mushroom chemical profiling and antioxidant activity of two different tea preparations from lion's mane medicinal mushroom. And so that was one that came out 3 years ago. And basically just looking at extracts from these dried mushroom teas and what kind of chemicals they have in them that can do different properties that are associated with health benefits. Another one is lion's mane mushroom from culinary to medicine, where it says that, I should say lion's mane is a really cool mushroom that's from found in the northern hemisphere. I love it. I ate it for the first time a couple years back because they sell, one of the local growers sold it at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. Really tasty. I loved it. I guess it's been used in the past for a medicinal product. So like a long history of traditional Chinese medicine. I know they've got a lot of mushroom products. And yeah, so there's just all these articles and they're kind of talking about, oh, well, we found this chemical and, you know, this is a known antioxidant. And you know, you hear words like superfood. Like, I think since the 90s, that whole boom of eat these things or take these supplements and improve your health. And I'm very critical and skeptical of a lot of this.
Well, most things are not regulated in Canada. So, mm-hmm. I mean, when you're buying supplements, just know that.
Yeah, I think the ones that are sold, at least in the stores in Canada that have been regulated by Health Canada, they only make sure that they're not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And that they are labeled correctly. So if you know if it could hurt you to take too much of it, it has the dose, or it tells you you can't have it if you're a child, or pretty much everything if you're like a pregnant woman, right?
Yeah.
That's the only regulation. It's not saying that this is a real beneficial medicine. And so
that has been tested empirically. Yeah.
Well, like even if it contains things that are known to have benefits, you don't even know
how you can absorb them.
That product. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That product even has it in them. Maybe mm-hmm. in the processing, it lost. Those chemicals got destroyed from like sunlight exposure or something. And, it has it active, but it's not absorbed by your body properly. I'm scrolling through these going, okay, yeah, once again, I know it's like complicated. There's all these articles that make it sound like it's really good, but what is it actually doing? And so I kind of wanted to focus in on the antioxidant claims. Yes, lion's mane mushroom has antioxidants. Sounds great. But antioxidants are quite complicated. They're complex, of course, in the human body. So when we talk about oxygen damage, there are like reactive oxygen species that we call ROS. And these are broadly defined as molecules containing oxygen, but are more reactive than like two oxygen molecules that are atoms that are bound together into O2, which is like in the air around us. And so in our bodies, the reactions that we do sometimes create reactive oxygen species, these ROSs. And so these contain unpaired electrons that can bind to other molecules. Very simply. We won't get into the whole chemistry of that. But they have roles in performing physiological reactions in our body that we need. And they also can be formed by accident or get too much of those, and they can cause damage to our bodies. So, for example, we will produce hydrogen peroxide in our body naturally, which is slightly reactive, and that's fine. Or nitric oxide is used for things. So it says here sperm function, egg fertilization, embryonic development. There's growth and development of organs, including the brain, that these reactive oxygen are actually good for. But then we also have ones like the hydroxyl radical. So that's an oxygen, a hydrogen with an extra electron that this article calls fearsomely reactive. So what I'm looking at here is a 2023 article from Nature, the journal Nature, by Halliwell, and it's understanding the mechanisms of antioxidant action in health and disease. Very good. Oh, actually, that's from this year. So it's very, very recent. I wanted to get something that is a review article. So it's a really good scientist in the field who's looking at all the other papers that have been coming out and then trying to like combine those together into a story, yes. right? An informed story. So we've got good oxidants in our body. We have bad oxidants in our body that can, for example, damage our DNA and cause cancer, right? And that's what people kind of focus on. Oh, we don't want those. So I want antioxidants to stop them. And even just defining an antioxidant is difficult. So this says this question has been discussed for decades. And in 2022, there was a consensus statement that arrived at two possible definitions. So one, any substance that delays, prevents, or removes oxidative damage to a target molecule, or a substance that reacts with an oxidant to regulate its reactions with other targets, thus influencing redox-dependent biological signaling pathways.
Which means?
So something that's sucking up these, it binds to these these reactive oxygen species that could be causing damage to our body and like regulates them, stops them from doing this, which is good when we need them. But there is no best antioxidant. It says there's different antioxidants that react with different reactive oxygen species at variable rates. They act in various cellular, subcellular, and intraorganellar. So like the tiny sort of organs inside your cells that protect different molecules and processes in the body. So we actually make antioxidants in our own body naturally. You can get them from your diet, like pretty much all whole vegetables and fruits.
Especially grains. Colored, lots of colors. Things rich in colors.
Yeah, so you can just get it from eating a normal like...
rainbow diet, I call them.
Yeah, and not even like crazy vegetable form, just like your normal amounts and whole, right? Like not these dried... I think once you start getting into processing, then the chances are you might be losing these things. So that's probably your best bet to invest your money in is like fresh fruits and vegetables. So yeah, I don't want to get too much into it, but things like vitamin E. Vitamin E is actually like a group of different antioxidants, so that is great to take. And they know that if you have a low intake of vitamin E's or a sorbate, which one's a sorbate again? I can't remember. I think it's got another popular name.
Of course.
I think is it vitamin C? I can't remember.
That sounds about right. Well, something. Scientists, don't listen, scientists.
Yeah, okay. But if you don't have enough vitamin E in your diet, then you can have increased levels of oxidative damage that they found in humans. But they've also found that if you have high intakes, so like above what a normal person would consume, then it doesn't seem to help. It doesn't.
It can only do so much. The system is just flooded.
Yeah.
It reaches a point where it helps you, and then it's just now just becomes its own entity in your body that's not doing anything necessarily.
Yeah. So there's human studies and they just haven't found anything exciting at all about that. But so you should have enough vitamin E, but you don't need to go crazy on it. But yeah, the marketing, so antioxidant health supplements are so popular. They're huge business. Just remember that if something costs money, then someone's going to try and sell it to you. Yeah. And they may pump up those claims. And I'm not saying it's going to hurt you to drink Lion's Mane iced tea, but maybe it'll hurt your bank.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That might not be to the full advantage.
So I just wanted to say a few things that can make a difference, whether a supplement will work. First is, does it work as well in the body as they find in like a Petri dish? Mm-hmm. You know, is it... when it gets to the body, is it actually absorbed by the body? Can it even react fast enough with the reactive oxygen in your body? Is it in the right place? All these things, complex, lots of studies. And so far, taking supplements for antioxidant supplements so far just haven't really shown much benefit there.
As much as they're claiming them.
Yeah. So, I think I don't want to like poo-poo them, you know. I think if you want to go buy Lion's Mane, like, I don't know if you could buy it right now, but because I've seen it in the farmers markets, but if you want to go buy it and like eat it with your dinner, have a delicious meal, and then maybe get some like good benefits because you've got that whole mushroom, like if you take all those little chemicals in it that are supposed to be helpful and separate them out, like, do they even work individually? Who knows? Just go eat a mushroom, you know?
Just enjoy it.
A safe mushroom.
A safe mushroom. Always the safe mushrooms. Mushrooms can be very dangerous.
Yeah. And so do you want to talk a little bit about the dangers?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I chose mushrooms because I wanted to talk about all the positive magical wonderment, because I have faith and hope that mushrooms are going to be saving the planet. There are things that are being invented and being, well, not invented, that are being explored and looked at that are giving me such hope. But I didn't know that. I knew more about that, so I focused on some of the stuff I didn't know, which was more of the disease and prevention. And that was kind of scary. So we're going to talk a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Canada. And I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but I think, so there's two types of fungal diseases that the government of Canada have been kind of looking at on their websites. And one is called the zoonotic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, zoonotic, and that is a fungal disease such as ringworm that it can spread from animal and people. So it can be exchanged between people and animals. The other one they're looking at is histoplasmosis, which are fungal diseases that can't spread from people to people, but can both infect animals and people.
Mm-hmm.
So some can be spread, some can infect. And obviously exposure, you have to be exposed to these funguses to kind of be affected by them. And so again, just some basic awareness, fungal diseases are on the rise worldwide, that increasing temperatures allowing infectious fungus to spread to new previously colder areas, climate change leading to the emergence of new fungal infections, and such as some scientists thinking that the deadly C. aureus fungus is perhaps from that. One of the things I didn't realize is you've heard of resistant antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that fungus also can become resistant to the fungal things that we have out there. So there's a lot of antifungal, like they're spraying that they're trying to do. Then we also have antifungal medicines that we're taking. And some of these are essentially creating a super fungal. So they're starting to become resistant to the use of this highly used antifungal. So again, similar to antibiotics, just kind of was a bit overused, got a little bit excited, and we're kind of creating some new...
That actually really surprises
me. Some new monsters.
Because I think of like bacteria and viruses and stuff. The problem is they're so small and simple, and they replicate so much that they like speed their evolution, right? So whereas humans will take so long to evolve in a positive way, because we reproduce so slowly, like the antibiotic resistant bacteria, they're evolving really fast to be resistant to those medicines. But yeah, I guess mushrooms,
and that's similar what they
replicate
were saying is,
fast. Although I think they're so much more complex
because they're multi-celled. Yeah,
that I would think that it's harder to get a positive evolution, like a DNA change that's not going to like mess up all the systems of the organism.
And that's the thing too, I think is just the not knowing, and that some things can rapidly have been able to mutate and change, and other things maybe have been taking just a slow time to happen, and again are just trying to survive, I'm assuming. So they've adapted and they can talk to each other, so who knows what they're saying.
Well, actually that happens with bacteria too. They can send each
heads
other
up, heads up, don't
send
go down there,
DNA or RNA, and be like, here you go,
this is how you deal with that. And so that was new to me, so I was kind of like, ooh. And then of course some of the human fungus infections that we know about are like the fungal nail infection, we have the vaginal and just the body candida one, we have the ringworm, and all of those joys. And then there's a bunch of other ones that I actually can't even pronounce, so there's lots of ones that if you go and travel in different areas, so again, just different moist soils in some parts of the United States and Canada, you can get those things. So again, even when you're out in the woods and you're flipping around grasses and stuff like that and decay, just know that there are different things that can happen. So for instance, a poor chef recently in Michigan just had to be taken off life support, he ended up getting Aspergillus.
Aspergillus,
mm-hmm. which again is an infection caused, it's a mold that lives indoors and outdoors, and they feel like he was getting it when he was out in the forest.
Oh.
And so he got some of these spores in there and obviously didn't respond to any of the treatment, antifungal treatment. So he was actually he was infected at end of last year, mm-hmm. and was just taken off of life support, and it ended up in his lungs.
Yeah,
so,
I was about to say, I think probably the biggest risk is inhaling those spores, right? Which usually I would associate with like enclosed spaces, but I guess if you're right up there and
as we said, we're breathing spores every like. It's,
have you ever?
I just breathed in 10 spores supposedly. Yeah.
Jumped on puffballs as a child, right? Like that little poof that comes out of that mushroom.
And those are the ones we can see. I mean, a lot of the spores we can't even see. So yeah, so that was kind of like kind of scary, but does remind me of my big scary story, which is I end up developing asthma. From living in a house that ended up with black mold. So this was in Victoria. Mm. And it was, you know, turn of the century house built around 1900s. Beautiful. Oh, loved the house. And three floods happened in that house at the time when I was living there. And unfortunately, I didn't realize enough at that time and I didn't push my landlords. And so they didn't properly dry things. So a flood happened one time, toilet overflowed and came into my kitchen. Up above me, there was, I heard a stream, a babbling brook in my kitchen.
You know, I have also experienced this renting in Vancouver.
You never want to hear a babbling brook in your kitchen.
It's lovely to come into your kitchen in the middle of the night to find water streaming down from someone's bathroom above.
Exactly. So, I mean, it couldn't have been, it was the best place because again, the place you could sterilize, it wasn't, you know, soft places, but ew. But by the third time, again, not realizing this was years I lived in this place, 10 years, a friend moved in upstairs, one of our dear friends, and she was our canary. And she just started to get all these started to get really sick, started to get all of this stuff that was like really bad. And again, we're just like, oh, but poor her, right? Oh, what's going on? We're fine. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in my sibling's room, we have slatted boards, like, and you can see, I think, dust growing out all along this, every wall, every corner had just dust, just a little bit of dust. So my friend who's sick getting upstairs, she ends up moving because they need to do some renovating. And the landlord comes down one day, black, his face is black, he's wearing a mask, and he just says, poison. He was from like Austria, so he didn't have a very thick accent. He's just like, poison. And that I ended up moving out, not because of that. Some other things ended up happening around them, but that I ended up developing asthma while living there. My sibling never did, but they were in the room that was the one that we saw them actually could visibly see the mold in. But he had taken apart some wall and found it everywhere. And so I think that's the thing that people kind of around here with the weather changing, when we're starting to get these colder, wetter periods for longer times, you're starting to mimic places where molds can start to grow. So in the north, we haven't had to worry too much about mold. You get a little bit of condensation here and then, but we do seem to get enough fluctuations in temperature. We get some dry spells. But now when we have these like cold, cold times happening, just know that things may be just hibernating for a little bit and then getting ready to grow again. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, actually I want to say, like for me also living in a basement suite in Vancouver, had leaking, wasn't maintained well. And when we moved out, like in the back of a closet, we'd move like an old box and behind it, black looking mold. And I freaked out. And then when we moved into our place here, like even without the right optimal weather conditions, if your house isn't constructed well or there's a flood and it doesn't have anywhere to go, that moisture stays in there.
Yeah.
And so I had one scare where we had water leaking through the roof and a black spot formed. And I freaked out and I like masked up. I was so scared. And it turned out that there used to be a wood stove there and that there was some charred wood and like also not
creosote or something. Yeah, just a bit of creosote in the rafters.
Just a little water with that. But we also had a really bad carpenter ant infestation a couple years ago. And what I learned is they love moist areas, and what we'd found is that the way that they had put like vapor barriers and wood, like a plywood ceiling with vapor barrier and then some like cardboard ceiling with another prime, plastic. Like,
because what it needs, they don't want that airflow.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. If you have storage of something, that's where you're finding in that closet behind where those things were leaning against, it mm-hmm. wasn't getting that airflow. Where the rest of it was, it must be that the spores can't land. Do you know why? Oh, Carly, do you know you're out there, Carly? You listening? Why don't they land when there's wind? So that was my biggest thing. That now, whenever I store things, I always have to have some sort of airflow, mm-hmm. like a fan out there that's moving the air. It doesn't have to dry the air, but it's just circulating the air.
Well, that's what I was just wondering. Is it that the airflow does keep it drier, right? Because if it sits and there's moistness, then it just kind of, it keeps building. But if it's not dry air, like, it's still moving. So, I don't know, but I'm just guessing.
But because that scared me so much, and I'm still feeling the effects of that, and of course now I'm so paranoid every time there's a flood or something like that, I just get, like Laura, I get loaded up and go to try to find it. And my biggest thing that I want to relay today is that if you do have a flood, you need to find the end of that source. So you need to go and remove walls. You need to remove your floors. Mm-hmm. You need to find out where that water went to, because it doesn't need to be that flood that you get. You could just have started that one that gives it that little bit. And then if there's like a slowly, gradually, you can end up with a severely molded house and you can lose your whole house. Some of the molds are so bad that they basically just have to, they just close you out. You can't take your belongings with you. You just are kind of sayonara. So
yeah, or you end up having to hire really expensive certified renovation staff,
and the government, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. So if you do have a flood, please go to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, because they have a homeowners and renter guide on mold cleanup after disaster. And that could be literally just a toilet overflowing. In my case, it ran down three stories, right? Like, it just went into the walls, into the floor, and down into the basement. And they dried out the basement, but they didn't dry up the middle part, so who knows what was going on there. And then it's important to go to this one, because it's very important safety instructions on how to mask up. To actually be, when you're dealing with the molds, you then need to remove those clothing. Don't bring your mask and clothing back into the house. I didn't know about that. I just thought, oh, I'm protected. But of course, you then can carry the spores on your clothing. So if you are doing a cleanup, make sure you're changing your clothes and not bringing them back into other places. But go to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and make sure you're finding the end. Like, make sure you find where that water ends, because then you know, and you can see it, you can look at it and know and check it. Because one of the worst culprits for mold is drywall. And again, often what we're thinking we're seeing is we're seeing this black mold. And what I'm going to be probably telling you is the walls in that place, you probably can imagine inside that you couldn't see.
Oh, I don't want to.
Right? That's what I was like. What I couldn't see was like, what? Everything's fine. Like, it looks like a water stain. It'll look like a little something, but look
out. Out of sight, out of mind. But really, I know. I get flagged. Like, oh, Laura, don't open that up, because once you see things, then you have to do all this. But I'm like, I need to see it. I need to know. And like, I recently found another part of our roof that was very poorly constructed. And once I opened it up, there was a whole bunch of moisture in there. No mold yet, thankfully. And now I'm airing it out and letting it dry.
You just don't want to mess around, because the likelihood of you getting black mold is low. However, the risk is, it's just not worth it. So just act, assume the worst, and then you're preventive. And then you can take care of it, and you can sit back and enjoy your house for many years to come, and your health.
Indeed. All right, so we got 5 minutes left, and we just went into the scary stuff.
Oh my gosh, let's do some quick happy. Okay, this is why I wanted to do this, and instead we just doomed and gloomed you the whole time. So of course, mushrooms are amazing, and I think they're the hope. They're giving me hope in where I feel so overwhelmed and so sad. And I am seeing like so many funguses right now on all of the trees, and the trees are so unhealthy in the north. So I do get a little bit overwhelmed, because I can tell with so much fungus visible that things are looking bad in the forest.
Well, I mean, that's
because of all the trees.
Feels simple. Yeah. But if there's a lot of dead trees, I guess you're seeing a lot of food for fungi.
Well, they're on the living trees now and causing some major infections. We won't get into. So like, trees are endangered right now. One in four trees in Canada are endangered. And I would say in the valley, it's even more than that, in Kispiox Valley. Some of the trees are doing pretty bad here. But for hope, mushrooms have done amazing, amazing things. So obviously some people maybe have heard of it around mental health and around just kind of helping in around post-traumatic stress and trauma. And so there's all this amazing research right now around mycelium and doing those magic trips, right? Like we do those trips. And there is amazing actual science-based research out there right now that is showing huge things. So right down to microdosing they're looking at, as well as these bigger kind of life-changing events. And again, it's about stimulating the brain network and allowing new networks and connections to take place. So that's kind of the science behind the mushroom brain kind of experiment that they're looking at, and some amazing things. The other thing is they've been looking at mushrooms for cleaning up oil, because again, mushrooms or fungi can live off of carbon, which is oil products. So they have shown where you have a pile of oil, and they tried all these different cleaning things in the mushroom pile where they go and throw some mushrooms on it. I think it was within a few months, might have even been less, took this oil and made it a living earth plant, because mushrooms make our soil. They're our soil. They are the things that create life and take away that life. They are the connector of everything. So everything is broken down and recreated and redistributed through the mushroom network. So in that, they were able to take this oil and be like, hey, we break it down into the little parts that aren't scary. And all of a sudden you have things living in this pile of oil that all of a sudden had organisms within a year. The other thing they're looking at for mushrooms, the fungi, is carbon, that carbon part I was talking about, being able to take carbon out and being able to store it. And so they're looking at, like, can we find ways to do these mushrooms where we can store thousands of years of this carbon, and like within just a couple years, say, help an ocean all of a sudden vibrate itself. So those are kind of some of the amazing, hopeful things. So to me, mushrooms are, I say, the way of the future. And I bet you're going to start to see even more and more things coming out that are going to be life-changing. I mean, I'm quite excited.
Yeah, I think about, it's like we've scratched the surface, or it's like this deep ocean and we don't know everything that's down there. And there's, I mean, yeah, the world of fungi is probably the deepest ocean that we could imagine. And so much of it hasn't been studied. Like we feel like we're in this place with science, like, oh, have we reached the end? And, but you think about how things are funded, you know, like a lot of these Lion's Mane benefit articles, like they use a lot of language to get grant money, right? They're like, this is positive for human health, so give us money to study these. Like, I think we should just be studying all these wonderful things that we don't know about
that we're gonna find out what we don't know, right? Like, that's the thing, like, the magic is out there. And so to me, there is that hope, because how quickly you can do things. Ooh, like the death suit, the mushroom death suit.
So actually, I think that's been debunked.
You can do the mushroom, but you can do the natural. They have it available in BC right now. It is actually happening. So in BC, they have the mushroom death suits, which are where the mushrooms themselves. So you're not put any chemicals in other than our bodies themselves are walking biohazard.
Yes.
So this is why they want the mushroom suits. The mushroom suits, again, like how they took away the oil, the idea is the mushroom suit would be purifying our contaminants. So if we're burning our bodies, they're going up into the air, pollutions. If we're putting in the ground, it's going into the ground. So this way, the idea is the mushroom suit. So supposedly, it is available in BC right now. There's a website that you can go and check out. So if you wanted to look at death suits.
Do your own research, as I feel like I've read about them and they haven't quite reached what people hoped level would be, that maybe just like a natural barrier might, a burial might be.
Well, it is that. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. It is that. Because you have to still be, and you have to be buried in a green cemetery. So if people are wanting green cemeteries, I mean, it can't be bad in that sense.
I think Prince George is getting one, or has the space.
I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like in the last year, when I went and did a little bit of look, there's a bunch of stuff coming up.
I really want to do a death episode.
Yes, I will do a death episode. Death.
We'll save that for then. We'll do some more research. All right, then. That's the end of our show. You probably heard the alarm in the background. That's my way of knowing that my show is done. So
thanks
take
for
care.
Having me.
Yeah, and I'll come on to your show. And
yes,
all the fun things. So keep listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio.
Out.